views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. This is Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited to have Bob Kelleher here with us. He is the author of an amazing book called I Engage, Your Personal Engagement Roadmap. He's also a best-selling author of many other books, a keynote speaker, and a consultant who travels the globe sharing his insights on employee engagement, leadership, and workforce trends. Bob can also be seen and heard on national media and is a frequent guest writer and contributing editor on many national publications, including Business Week, Forbes, and Fortune. Bob is a frequent conference keynote speaker, and he is presented throughout the U.S. and Canada, as well as China, Japan, Europe, South America, Mexico, and the Middle East. He's presented to many leadership teams at many of the world's top companies, including Prudential, Lockheed Martin, Ceridian, Dana-Farber, and many, many more. Finally, Bob is the founder and president of the Employee Engagement Group, a global survey, products, and consulting firm working with leadership teams to enhance their leadership and employee engagement effectiveness. Welcome, Bob.
It's great to be here, Claudette. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've been really looking forward to our conversation. I love your book, I Engage, and your personal engagement roadmap. Yeah, I know you've been in the employee engagement arena for a really long time, but I was curious what inspired you to write this particular book?
Well, I've written other books within the areas of employee engagement as well as leadership, and I, like probably many managers, leaders, CEOs out there in business today, have been frustrated that in spite of a booming economy, what we're finding is we've only seen a marginal uptick in organizational-wide employee engagement. And when I think about that, it's troubling because you have people like me and many others who earn a living in this space. Mm-hmm. And the fact that all of our collective efforts haven't been really moving the needle. I started kind of peeling away the onion and realizing that there's something else going on that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so in your book, you talk about this disengagement dilemma, and you know, you did some research on this. So what have you found out about why people, like you said, despite so many people's best efforts, why are people so disengaged?
Yeah, there are some significant factors at play that organizations don't seem to address, one of which is the effort around engagement itself tends to focus on the employee. And what we've seen with our research is that what happens after work has as much to do with one's engagement as what happens during work. So if you have your mother-in-law who just moved in because of elder care needs, or if you're going through a divorce, or if you're dealing with a loved one who has an illness, or on the more happier side, if you recently got married, or you have a new partner, or if a child was born, these sort of life events can really trigger your engagement at work up or down. And what we've discovered is the vast majority of efforts around engagement focus on the employee. So you're trying to get the organization, the leader, the manager, the supervisor of a culture. You're putting a lot of energy and effort into these areas. But if I'm going to a divorce, it doesn't really matter what my organization's doing. My disengagement in life is going to negatively impact my engagement at work. So what we've seen, the pockets of engagement that seem to be high tend to be focused around managers who are these empathetic leaders, people who really are leading the employee in a more holistic way so that they're more sensitive to what's happening after work as much as what's happening during work.
Wow. And so this, it's, I really liked that about your book and your research. This, I, you know, here we are focusing on the employee at work, like you said, and totally forgetting about the other half of who they are and focusing on this whole person, right?
Yeah. And I do polling. So if I'm doing a smaller keynote, because polling doesn't work with a large keynote venue, but if I'm speaking to a group of, you know, 50 to 150 people or a leadership team, I'll use real-time polling in which we will actually ask people, where are they in, you know, the baseline of engagement in terms of what's happening with their life, plus or minus. And it's fascinating that you see this the scatter diagram, and often these are leaders. So if you have leaders in which, you know, half of them are under the baseline of their baseline of engagement, you can imagine what's happening organizationally. So, you know, even if someone is managing people, if they're dealing with, you know, the typical life events, good or bad, it's going to impact what happens in work. So that's the first thing we discovered in trying to get organizations to realize the barriers of work and life have been broken down with technology, right? So it's, you know, it's more porous than ever before. So it's impossible for an employee to go through the day without, you know, checking their device to see what's happening on the home front. And it's almost impossible to be, you know, off on a Saturday without not being somehow connected to work. So we're seeing the kind of breakdown of the barriers between work and life anyways. So it's kind of naive to think we can just look to engage one half of the person who's at work.
Yeah, and that makes so much sense when you put it that way, right? That work and life have gotten so intertwined. And then one thing that makes me think about, though, is when we, you know, we often organizations will say, you know, when you're at work, though, right? You know, we don't want you bringing your personal life in. We don't, you know, if you're having a problem at work, at home, right? They kind of, well, we are sympathetic and empathetic and we understand, you know, hardships. We also really need you to be able to do your job. And so how do you balance that? Yeah.
Yeah, great question. Because that's the pushback. You know, the highly left brain people will challenge me, and they'll say, "Hey, we're running a business. This isn't a social agency." And you know, as soon as they walk through the door, they have to be a professional and kind of leave what's taking place at home at home. But the reality is, that's just simply not life, and it's certainly not life in 2018. Again, with the barriers of work life being so porous these days. And what I like to tell folks is we're not suggesting that you sit with your employees and ask them, you know, how is their relationship going? Or are they having any health issues or family members? That's not the goal here. The goal is to create a culture between the manager and the supervisor in which the supervisor feels that the employee is being cared for as a person. So if I report to you, Claudette, and you're an empathetic manager, and I get the sense that you really care about me as a person, then I'm going to be more comfortable going to you and saying, hey, I might not have my A game over the next couple of weeks. You know, my wife has a biopsy coming up. It's really impacting you know, the entire family. I'll keep you posted, but I just wanted you to know. See, that's the type of care that we think a manager needs to have for the employee. And it's not asking if anything's going on, but it's creating an environment in which the employees feel so comfortable that they can share what's happening in their more holistic life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it's really, it's coming, the employee, right, is bringing it forward, that they have feel comfortable that their manager is going to be accepting of this information and willing to engage with them around it.
It goes back to the selection of who we're asking, you know, to manage people, right? So as long as I've been in the human resources space, the number one driver of engagement is identical to the number one driver of disengagement. If I have a great boss, I'm more likely to be engaged. If I have a bad boss, I'm more likely to be disengaged. And that was true 35 years ago, and it's true today. So I think organizations do a lousy job of selecting the types of people that should be managing employees. And I'll often ask a group of HR practitioners, how many of you have empathy as a core competency that you require in anyone who's managing people? And how do you seek out if candidates to manage people are empathetic people? And you hardly ever see a hand go up. So it kind of goes back to this, you know, the selection of the people that we're asking or we're entrusting to manage employees, because that really is the key cog in the engagement cycle. You know, if you do nothing else right, you have to make sure that the people that you're asking to lead people are the types of individuals that demonstrate that they care about the well-being of the people that they lead. And I think organizations continue to do a lousy job in the selection.
Yeah, often the organizations I do consulting in, it's the good old, this person was technically really competent and maybe even brilliant, so we promoted them, right, into a manager's role.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You take the individual contributor.
Right.
And the individual contributor, who's probably really, really good as an individual contributor, and we ask them to manage, you know, six people. And the other thing that often happens, Claudette, is we don't reduce the workload of the individual contributor.
Right.
So we ask them to manage six people, but their workload has stayed the same. And that's kind of what they went to school for, perhaps, and that's what they enjoy doing. And now they have to manage six people, and they're not equipped. Either their workload's not equipped, maybe their interest. It's really not where they want to be, but they feel that's how you make more money in this organization to, you know, take on leadership roles. So I think the model is greatly flawed. And then when you have, you know, the first sign of a business slowdown or, you know, a change in the market in the business, you know, then you cut training and development of the people skills, right? You know, you continue to do sales training and project management training, but you put a freeze on, you know, the training that we ask people to go through to be better leaders. That's usually the first area that gets cut.
And yeah, and it's almost illogical when you put it that way, right? Why would we want to cut the training that's going to support the people that manage and lead the people who allow us to have our business, right? Right.
Yep. And, and it happens in almost every organization that I, you know, work with. And what's interesting is, you know, the vast majority of people that run companies are pretty smart people, right?
Yeah.
And when
you
talk to them about it, they understand it, but it's not as intuitive. You know, what's intuitive for the typical CEO is probably more on the quantitative side. Right? And what you and I are talking about is more on the qualitative side.
Yes.
So it's, you know, difficult to find the ROI. It's difficult to see the investment return this week, where if you cut costs, you can see, you know, the return pretty quickly, right? But if you're investing in the selection and development of people to manage people, you know, you're entrusting that this will take time and we'll see a dividend down the road. But we're, you know, it's such a manage for today culture that we're in. Whether you're a publicly traded company or you're owned by a private equity firm, or you have financial investors that are looking for some type of return, you know, it's too much of an immediate focus on the today. And leadership really is an investment for tomorrow. And I think that's another disconnect we see in organizations.
It's really looking at what we're doing to, you know, how is what we're doing today going to benefit us 2 years from now, right?
Yep. And, you know, the other thing that we found with iEngage, it's the personal accountability piece. So, you know, we find there are many people in organizations who simply dislike their job. So if, you know, if a company is investing in engagement type initiatives and they are, you know, a wonderful culture, if the job you're doing is just not a job that you want to be doing, it doesn't matter how well you're being led, right? So this whole concept of iEngage is really getting the employee to look at themselves and to hold themselves accountable for their own engagement, that, you know, instead of blaming my boss or the culture or the pay structure or the policies or the training, I need to look in the mirror and and ask, what am I doing about my own engagement? So what we found is that once you kind of put the mirror on the employee and get them to kind of focus on their own engagement, we see an uptick in engagement when you get people to kind of personalize it and take control of their own engagement rather than waiting for the organization to focus on engagement.
Yeah, it's a great point. So on one hand, one side of the coin is having managers who have more empathy, right, and who are really caring and are willing to engage in conversations about the whole person. And then the other side, absolutely, is that people need to be involved in their own engagement, because it's actually disempowering to say, yeah, I'm hoping at some point my company will focus on engagement and I'll get more engaged, right?
I pulled together a lot of research for the video he's thinking about, and I encourage your listeners to take a peek at it. I think it's approaching 1.1 million views. It's the most watched engagement video throughout the world. It continues to get a lot of views, but some of the research we pulled together talks about the number of people that are disengaged who plan on looking for another job. But what is not mentioned, at least in the video, but it's some of the research behind the research, 48% of people who are actively disengaged have no plans to leave their current employer. And I just find that comically sad, right? So I am disengaged and I have no plans to leave. I'm going to stay, Claudette, and make your life miserable. And that's the personal accountability piece, right?
Yeah.
So how can you shine the light on the employee that, hey, this is a mutual commitment we have here, which is really how I define the whole concept of engagement. It's, me as the employee helping the boss or the company be successful. That's my component, while the company is trying to have me reach my, very best, have me reach my potential, right? That mutual commitment, the intersection of both sides looking to help each other is really what happens when you have a healthy culture, relationship, and the employee plays a role in this. So, I always tell folks, this is not about satisfaction, because satisfaction is so one-sided, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a common mistake that some of these technology firms that are the cool places to work, bring your dog to work, bring music, we have a remote workplace, free meals. Often we're introducing these satisfiers, right? So this is what the company is doing for me. And I always say, if you focus so much on satisfaction, you run the risk of building a culture of employee entitlement, not engagement. Because engagement, by definition, it's a mutual commitment between two parties, me as the employee, and the organization or the boss on the other side.
Wow. That's such a great definition. You said it's a mutual commitment, right? Between employee and employer. And I think a lot of people think of engagement as, how much do I like being at work? Right. Not that it's.
Yeah. But if they think about the word engagement, right? So if two partners become engaged, right? Just the definition of engagement, it really is the linkage of two parties, right? And it's no different inside the workplace. And it's why I always kick off the definition of engagement with what it isn't, in that it's not satisfaction. And by the way, in full disclosure, I am okay with employees being satisfied. The people that work with me every day, I want them to go home, happy and satisfied as well. But if that's my goal, I am not holding them accountable. If that's my goal, I am not setting clear expectations for them to achieve. So how can you build a culture in which engagement is the outcome, right? Because that's the goal. It's the outcome. It's not necessarily a thing, which is why engagement's always been so difficult to define.
Is that it's an actual outcome. And I love this distinction between engagement and satisfiers. I like that word satisfiers, because that again is often, and I can think of people I know work in companies where, right, you have food whenever you want, you have all these different, which is great, but you have all these different ways that, employees are drawn in, right, and their needs get met. And you're actually saying that that's great and it's really not engagement. These are two completely different.
Absolutely. I'm all for creating super cool cultures. So this isn't about taking those things away. But those things in and of itself are not defining your engagement model.
Right. You're saying they're really two different things. They impact each other and influence each other, but they're not the same. They're not the same.
Right.
Right. Such an important distinction. And account, you've mentioned accountability a few times, which I agree is so important. And how do you, when you're talking about accountability, what is its role in engagement? What do you see happening there?
Yeah, you know, this has been one of those areas that has actually surprised me, because on the surface, one would think that if I have a manager who's really holding me accountable, then I'm going to view that manager as a jackass. I'm going to view that manager as being unfair, or, you know, don't micromanage me. You know, I can hold myself accountable. But it was Aberdeen, which is a research company that's headquartered here in Boston, that first shed some light on the connection with accountability and engagement. And they actually, based on their research, they've actually done some studies that prove that one of the more significant ways you create engagement between a manager and an employee is for the manager to hold the employee accountable. So employees need and they want to be held accountable. So in high accountability cultures, we actually see engagement scores higher than low accountability cultures, because the vast majority of employees are driven to achieve, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're driven to achieve, a manager that is holding his or her employees accountable, you're really reinforcing the achievement and intrinsic motivational driver we all have. And again, we see a direct correlation between high accountability cultures and high engagement scores when we do surveys.
Wow. Yeah. And it sort of reminds me of, you know, when you're raising kids and they don't, they act like they don't want to be held accountable, but then you find out that's how they thrive, right? And you're
Absolutely.
Saying something because they get to, you know, they get to grow and evolve through that accountability. And the same, yeah, we're driven to achieve. And it's one of the things that I, you know, sometimes say with in organizations I'm consulting in is, you know, no one comes to work thinking, you know, I want to be really incompetent today. You know what? I want to make a million mistakes and be, you know, a jerk to people, et cetera, et cetera. Because sometimes as managers and leaders start to, you know, I'll be talking with them and I finally will call them on it, because they start to describe this person as though this person purposely wanted to come in and be incompetent on a particular day. And I've never met anybody yet who thinks, you know, yeah, today's the day, incompetence is the way to go, you know? So we actually, most people really want it, to your point, want to achieve, want to succeed, right? Want to contribute.
You know, I was on a call with a client this morning, I'm facilitating a workshop with their leadership team in 2 weeks in New York City. And one of the things that we're doing in this particular workshop, we're sharing this particular business unit's results versus all other business units within the company. And I'm insisting on this metric being shared because, again, it's my belief that no one wants to underperform. But the employees inside this particular business, they really don't realize that they are underperforming, because it's been kind of, you know, kept somewhat at the top level. Where I'm a believer in employees want to achieve. It is such a significant engagement driver that if you let them know that their team or their business unit or their department is underperforming, and you let them know, or better yet, you put them in charge of coming up with ways to improve their own performance, they take charge of it, because employees fundamentally don't want to underperform. They don't want to underperform in school as students, and they certainly don't want to underperform during work.
No, they really, really don't. They don't. They want, I think it's part of our human nature, right? To really want to do a great job, to do the best we can, and to grow and evolve, right? And work is a place that we can really give people the opportunity to do that. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. And when we come back, we will continue this really interesting discussion about engagement. Stay tuned.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning, to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty, beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
Are you stuck in unhealthy habits, toxic relationships, or low self-esteem? Do you crave a life of inspiration, love, self-acceptance, and fun? Sounds like you're on the verge. On the verge to your next big thing. Join Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio, helping you use your breakdown for a breakthrough, overcome life's greatest challenges, and live the life you want and deserve. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio or visit SeattleHealingHypnosis.com for more information.
Tune in to the hit show Raging Skillet Radio, mouthing off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
Hi, I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. If you're just joining us, I'm here with my guest, Bob Kelleher, who is the best-selling author of a book called I Engage, Your Personal Engagement Roadmap. And Bob, we were just talking about, you know, we just talked about accountability, right, and the role that plays in helping people to increase their engagement. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about was recognition, right? We often hear that engagement and recognition are linked. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. Let's take a step back for a second. And you know, before we get into recognition, which is so linked with engagement, let's first talk about why we don't recognize. Because in every engagement survey that we do, it doesn't matter who we do it for, how healthy an organization is. When we look at the bottom 10% of scoring, recognition scores are always in the bottom 10%. And that's replicated by Gallup when they do their famous Q12 survey, that you generally will see recognition very, very low. So you sit back and you have to ask yourself, well, recognition is free. Why don't we recognize more often? It doesn't cost us anything. And the upside is exponentially positive. Well, I have a premise, and the premise is we tend to put people in charge of organizations that tend to be high achievers, right? So for you to be a CEO, for you to be a member of the C-suite, chances are you've been a high achiever your entire life, which is why you're in the job that you're in. Mm-hmm. And what is a common trait of high achievers? High achievers look to fix. That's what they look to do. So if someone is reviewing a proposal and they happen to be my manager and their whole life they've been a high achiever and they review a proposal that I have written, right? Their tendency is not to look at the proposal and say, Bob, that is a terrific proposal. The tendency is to look at the proposal and say, Bob, you really need to have a different font size, or we need to make sure that, you know, five of the client names are on the top signature. So we tend to critique. That's human nature. Just put on the news, right? You know, the news is focused on telling us what's wrong with politics, telling us what's wrong. And the same thing happens in business. So you have a leadership team that is looking to fix all the time, and that trickles down throughout the organization. But if you focus on negativity, and I'm a former school teacher, so I remember this from child psychology courses. Mm-hmm. If you focus on the negativity, in fact, you are painting a negative image in the minds of your employees or children, and you're more apt to see a replication of the negativity that you're focusing on. So the power of recognition, and if you can get companies or leaders to focus on both recognition and building a celebratory culture. So you're communicating what is right in the organization. You're communicating to that example I just shared, what is right with the proposal. So lead with the positives, because if you recognize positive behavior, you are far more likely to see a replication of the positive behavior, which is, it's a reality that's
you know, famous sports people know. If you watch Lindsey Vonn before she, you know, goes down the downhill, she visualizes the successful run she's going to have. Conversely, if you're a golfer like me and I'm standing in front of a pond, all I'm thinking, Claudette, is do not hit the ball in the pond. Mm-hmm. What do I inevitably do?
Hit it in the pond.
I shake the ball, it goes in the pond, right? So if we tell our child, don't spill that glass of milk, it's too close to the table, inevitably the child is going to spill the milk. And there is research that supports this, that if you focus on the negative, you are painting a negative visual in the minds of that employee, and they are going to replicate the negative behavior. Now, what if you shift it? What if you shift the messaging throughout all levels of the organization that we're going to have a celebratory culture? We're going to start announcing and telling everybody what is right. We're going to celebrate the new hires. We're going to celebrate the proposals. We're going to celebrate the effort. We're going to celebrate the success. And, of course, we have to kind of look at the things that aren't working as well. But let's not lead with the constructive piece. Let's lead with the positive recognition piece. And it becomes contagious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a like attracts like, right? That these kinds of mindsets are so infectious, right? That we lead with that positive. Yeah.
You know, it's contagious. And I was at SHRM's national conference 2 weeks ago. I spoke, and one of the folks that I spoke beside, who was in a separate mega session, I was able to kind of look at his slides at the end, because he's a pretty famous guy, Dan Goldman.
He wrote the Emotional Intelligence book. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the slides that he shared was there is a mental connection. So if I'm a positive person and I'm speaking to you positively, there is a mental connection that my brain, the chemistry of my brain is actually in some weird brainwave way entering your brain and actually changing the chemistry of your brain in a more positive way. So the science is, you know, science of the brain that supports that if you're a negative manager, that negative energy is actually transcending to the person that you are speaking with. If you're a toxic employee, you know, the danger of hiring a toxic employee is actually more dangerous than the upside of hiring a star employee. So it's that negativity, and often it's triggered at the top with people not even realizing they're triggering it because they're so focused on fixing what is wrong, not taking a pause to kind of highlight, emphasize what's right.
Yeah, and it reminds me of years ago, I worked consulted for a number of years with an organization with, as you said, someone, the CEO was the founder. He was very high achieving. He was very left brain, brilliant guy. And he did not understand why anyone needed any positive feedback, because he didn't need any positive feedback. So we really had to talk a lot about it. I finally said, your leadership team, they're going to start leaving, right? Because all they hear from you is criticism. You've got to start talking about what they're doing well. Yeah.
You know, in a countless books that have been written on how to engage individuals, let's face it, the reality is the millennials have grown up in a world in which the parents and their coaches, you know, the losing team gets trophies, and parents tell them their children they can do anything they want to be. And then they enter the workplace and they find out they're entering cultures which, you know, recognition is scarce. So it's why we see the millennials as the least engaged population in the workplace. And the danger to organizations is they are now the dominant population. And again, I think some of these factors are triggering, you know, the kind of status quo of engagement levels, because you have more and more millennials who are being led in a baby boomer sort of way, and it simply isn't working.
Absolutely. One of the other things we can't leave out, of course, is money, right? money and engagement. What role is money playing?
Yeah, it's funny. I will tread on dangerous grounds if I'm speaking to an employee group and I ask the employees if they think money is an engagement driver. And inevitably, the employees will raise their hand yes. And then when I tell them, sadly, unless you are in a job in which the reward is so connected to the behavior. Think of the doorman or doorwoman at the hotel who, when the cab pulls up, or today the Uber driver pulls up, they right. quickly open the door and they say, "Good afternoon, ma'am. What are they looking for?" They're looking for a tip. They realize that the behavior and the reward are almost instantaneously connected, right? The vast majority of employees in the workplace were not so fortunate to have that type of reward system. So what we find is it almost has no relevance at all, with the exception of if it's perceived to be unfair. So I tell folks, money does not drive engagement, but it potentially can drive disengagement. Mm-hmm. So if I perceive that I am underpaid, I'm going to be disengaged. If I perceive that someone has got hired with the same experience as me and they're being paid more, that's unfair, I am going to be disengaged. If I feel I am an A player, and I work for a manager who has the peanut butter approach of dividing a merit increase where everyone gets 3.5 or 3.6 or 3.4, and I know I am the one that's staying late every single night, I am going to be disengaged. So the connection with money is not what employees want us to think, because employees want us to think that, you know, they will work harder if we pay them more. But the reality, and there's tremendous science behind this, Dan Pink's book, Drive, really talks mm-hmm. quite a bit about, you know, the role of money in engagement. But it really has very, very, very little impact, with the exception of when it's perceived to be unfair, it'll drive disengagement.
That's really, really interesting. Yeah, and as you were talking, a bunch of scenarios were running through my head of, you know, things I've heard employees say. You know, it's not fair. I haven't gotten my review, so I can't get my raise. You're right. It is all these perceptions of unfairness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm all this work and I'm not being paid enough. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Now, where it gets tricky is that you heard me earlier say we are all driven to achieve, right?
Right.
Money reinforces achievement, but it's not the money in and of itself that drives engagement. It really isn't. It's the winning. People want to win. Money reinforces the winning. And that's the role money plays in the engagement equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It reinforces the winning. Yeah.
And you know, the other thing that we haven't really spoken about, which is such a key factor here, and I know we're probably going to be running up to the end of the show soon, and I don't want to leave this out. Often I will work with a new client, and I'll spend time with them, and I'll conclude that they don't have an engagement issue. They have a hiring issue. And if you're not hiring the types mm-hmm. of people that you should be hiring, mm-hmm. then you're not going to be able to engage the wrong person.
And you know what we're going to do? Actually, we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we will focus on this hiring, because you're right. This is so critically important. So you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and stay tuned. We'll be right back to talk about the role of hiring and engaging your workforce.
A word of caution. If you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Do you believe you are meant to live with more joy, but you're just not sure how to get it? What does the phrase, "give me the joy," make you feel? Join me, Lynn Horde, every second and fourth Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, on the Give Me the Joy Show, as I take you on a journey to peel back the layers so you can take back your joy. To find out more about my work as the Joy Coach, including my popular programs, Joy School and Joy at Work, visit lynnhord.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you, discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion. Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Bob Kelleher. We are talking about employee engagement. Bob, how should listeners get in touch with you, learn about your books, and learn about your work? What's the best way?
Yeah, this gives us some idea on how long I've been in the engagement space, but it's pretty easy to find me. My domain is employeeengagement.com. I am the founder of the Employee Engagement Group, so that's our website. You can also find my videos on YouTube. Just type in Bob Kelleher, and you'll see some really great free resources. It's funny, I'm a fan of trying to get my work in the hands of as many people as possible, and we have a resources section on employeeengagement.com that is just a great resource for your listeners with free tools and articles. I have a free webinar coming up in 2 weeks. So we try to really offer a lot of great practical things in some ways, a public service to the area of employee engagement.
Well, that's great. Thanks for sharing that. Especially great to know about the resources and the videos, right? Such useful ways for people to start to understand more about what you and your group do. Before we took the break, we were starting to chat about hiring and this how critical hiring is in this whole process. Hey, what should we know about hiring?
Yeah, my first book was called Louder Than Words: 10 Practical Employee Engagement Steps That Drive Results. Mm-hmm. And step 10, sadly, is hire and promote the right behaviors and traits in your culture. And I say sadly because in so many ways, it should be step one, right? But we're not so fortunate as, you know, starting a company from scratch. You know, mm-hmm. when we often end up in an organization, there is an organization, and there are so many things that have to take place. But what we try to get people to understand is you really need to identify what are the behaviors and traits your organization values? Like, who are you as a firm? And some companies really well. And if you think of Southwest Airlines, they have kind of a fun, whimsical type of, culture. And it's not by accident. They look to hire fun type people. Well, if you think of Nordstrom's, they have this, you know, this focus on customer service. Well, therefore, the people they should be hiring, even if you're an account, you should be hiring people that have the behaviors and traits that define, you know, the Nordstrom's way. The Marines do this really well, right? If you look at the ads on TV, you know, as a younger kid, I would look at the ads and I would say, I don't think I'm cut out to be a Marine, right?
Right.
Because they're looking for a certain type of person. They're trying to weed you out before you have the opportunity to even apply, right? That's called knowing your employer value proposition. Who are you? And what I find just amazing, organizations spend a fortune on understanding their customer. They understand what their product or their packaging should be, their pricing. They understand, long-term planning on backlog and inventory. But if you ask them, what is your employer value proposition? Who are the types of people you know that succeed in your culture? They don't know. It's really remarkable. And I don't think you can ever truly have a highly engaged culture if you don't make a connection with the people that you should be hiring for your culture need to be the types of people that will succeed here. Because the airline pilot that works for Southwest Airlines is not going to be a cultural fit to work for say, United Airlines. So it's understanding what makes you different and how can you hire the types of people that you need to succeed in the culture that you've built. But again, sadly, a lot of people don't even understand who they should be hiring, and then they make a mistake. Or worse, they haven't built up a strong enough employment brand, the best place to work brand, so you don't have enough candidates to select from. So if I have five open recs and I'm behind in my deliverables and I only have two people applying for a job inside my department, I'm not going to be overly selective, right? So we're not going to make a mistake. These best place to work companies, the reason they remain best place to work companies is based on research. They tend to get 10 times more resumes than the organizations they compete with who are not considered best places to work. And again, you know, the more applicants you have, the more you can make that connection with, okay, I need to hire the best people that will fit in my culture, not just someone who can maybe do the job.
Right. And that's, again, that's sort of turning some of our preconceptions on their head, right? The best places to work, one of the reasons is they get that culture fit, right? They get the people who are the right, who stay engaged because they work within that environment. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And if you think of what's happening, to me, it's such a fascinating time to, say, be in human resources or to be in leadership. Because if you think of, say, the restaurant industry or the hotel industry, 15 years ago, 10 years ago even, if I owned a restaurant and I had a, three-star rating on TripAdvisor or Yelp, I could easily say, oh, just the unhappy diners are out there posting. Well, in reality, that restaurant owner is no longer in business. So what we've seen in the hospitality area, we are now seeing in the workplace. Social sites like Indeed and certainly Glassdoor, that if you are rated as a bad employer and I have choice as an applicant, why do I want to, eat at your restaurant? Why do I want to work for you, right? So these organizations that have, less than stellar kind of workplace reputations, I don't think they can survive long term without getting a handle around how do we improve our culture.
Yeah, exactly. There's a real, there's just such a huge connection there. Such a huge connection. So for employees or anybody who's listening, right? And anybody who listens later after this gets turned into a podcast, how can I take charge of my own engagement at work? What are the top three things I should be doing?
Yeah, well, the first one, and this is the shameless plug alert, you can pick up iEngage.
Right.
You can pick it up. It's in bookstores. It's on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. It'll give you 23 very practical career rest stops to kind of analyze why might you be compromising your own engagement. So, for the $19.99 or whatever the price is, it's a terrific, fun, easy resource that has the potential of really changing your life as it relates to your career. So that's the first thing that I would suggest. Second thing I would ask you to look in the mirror and start blaming everything else around you, culture, boss, pay, manager, coworkers, and start looking at yourself. What can you do to improve your engagement? Even if it's incremental, how can I change, how can I tweak my job in a way that will help me on the engagement side? And the third thing is that we started today's talk on, is there something else that's going on in your life that is impacting your engagement? So if you're not very happy in life, what we have seen is it's going to translate to a disengaged employee. So can you make modifications or changes in your life that hopefully can help you on the work side? Or is the unhappiness at work being driven by your unhappiness in life being driven by your disengagement at work? If so, what can you do about it? Because there's no one else in charge of your career other than you. And that's really the whole concept of iEngage, getting employees to take responsibility for their own engagement. They are in charge of their own careers, and there's countless resources out there that can really help your listeners.
Yeah, and I like that these are all really great. And that second one about looking in the mirror, right? What can I do to improve my own engagement, right? If I put aside all the reasons why I think externally, you know, I'm disengaged. And number three, you know, and also, like you said, I can think of people off the top of my head who they love their life outside of work. And it's what's going on at work that really, really frustrates them. And it sounds like you're saying they need to take, you know, they maybe should take a look at whether they need to change jobs, right? Or ask for something different work, right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I gave a keynote to a school system for the opening day keynote for 600 school teachers. And one of the more rewarding pieces of feedback that I've ever received in my life happened 6 months after I gave this talk. I got an email from one of the educators in the audience. It was the first day of school, and she realized after hearing my talk when I engaged that she was blaming the school, she was blaming the administration, she was blaming the parents, she was blaming the kids, and she realized that she was simply burnt out as a teacher. And she sent me a note 6 months later to say that she picked up the book, she's in the process of a career change, and it has improved her outlook in life exponentially. And that's a classic case of...
Yeah,
it was such a powerful, you know, note, Claudette. It really made everything that I do kind of validated and worthwhile.
That's wonderful. And what a great note to end the show on. All right. So I want to thank you so much, Bob, for being here today and sharing all of your wisdom and research and experience. It was really, really a pleasure. And
thank
everybody.
Thank you so much for having me on, Claudette.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. And thank you all for tuning in today to Cultural Brilliance Radio. As always, we had a very interesting time. Please join us on the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. Have a great couple of weeks, and we'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at claudetterowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.